We're going to go into the interview with Dave Donaldson, and we'll be back. Have you lived in Africa?
I've not lived in Africa. I must confess that after my first trip there, I fell so in love with Zambia that I think I would move there in a heartbeat. We just absolutely fell in love with the country and with the people. They were wonderful. We enjoyed ourselves immensely.
How did you get to go to Africa for the first time?
It was a trip to research the book. I'd started Heart of Diamonds, and I was about halfway through the first draft and felt that I really needed to see what the conditions were like on the ground, what the people were like, how they lived, what they ate, in a way that you can only get firsthand. Unfortunately, the Democratic Republic of Congo at the time was still in war conditions, so we could not go there. So my wife, Nora, and I traveled to Zambia and traveled around the countryside, enjoying the sights and the people and the way of life. That's the reason that we went in the way that we went. We went as tourists, but I did a lot of writing while I was there and a lot of research, obviously, took thousands of photographs and actually even some audio interviews with some people, all in research for Heart of Diamonds.
How did you come to the idea of writing Heart of Diamonds?
Well, I am a writer by trade, and I knew I wanted to write a thriller, which is what Heart of Diamonds is. It's a thriller about diamond smuggling. But I did not choose the Congo as the subject until I happened to run across a magazine article from 1994. It was in Time magazine. And I remember the title caught my eye. It was called Jewels for Jesus. And the article was about Pat Robertson, the televangelist, the president of the 700 Club. He was a United States presidential candidate at one time. And this article talked about how Pat Robertson was partners with Joseph Mobutu in a number of very interesting commercial enterprises in the Congo. In 1994, he owned a 50,000-acre farm near Kinshasa. He owned a diamond mine in Mayamaneni, which is where I set the diamond mine for Heart of Diamonds. He owned gold mines and timber concessions, and they were all profit-making operations. They had little or nothing to do, of course, with his church. The irony of this man of God partnering with the person who really serves as the archetype for kleptocratic dictators in Africa, Mobutu Sese Seko, was just too great to pass up. And so that was the spark that led me into the Congo and led me into the book. The book itself kind of took off from that concept, and once I started the research into the real conditions in the Congo, it took on an entirely different life. And that's what's, quite frankly, been so gratifying to me, is the response that I've gotten from Heart of Diamonds, from people who know what is going on in Congo and feel that I made a very accurate depiction of conditions on the ground there and much of the politics. Even though the book is fiction, it's a novel, it is meant to be entertaining. There's a love story, there's gunfire, and there are good guys and bad guys, but it all happens against a background of what's actually happening in the Congo, which is quite a serious situation, as we all know.
Let's talk about the Congo. As a Westerner that went to Africa for the first time, you went as a tourist,
yes,
as most people do, and then you met the people, and then you chose to set a book in the Congo. That must have evoked some past literary events, because it brings to mind The Heart of Darkness by Conrad, which was written over a century ago. But it's a different world. The world of Heart of Darkness is very different from the world of Heart of Diamonds.
I agree with you to a point. Yes, the world has changed greatly since Joseph Conrad wrote Heart of Darkness. But the things that drive the events in the Congo, the way the people are treated, the events that are shaping the lives of the people there, the forces that are shaping those events, are not that much different from when Joseph Conrad was riding a riverboat up the Congo River before he wrote Heart of Darkness. If you think about it conceptually, the conflict in Congo has always been about the wealth of the countryside. The people have been exploited and used by their own leaders, by outside forces, by other countries, by multinational corporations, you name it. The corporate structures may have changed since 1902, when Heart of Darkness was published, but the concepts haven't when you get right down to it. Now, I did not allude, at least consciously, to Heart of Darkness when I wrote the book. I have to say that the last time I read Heart of Darkness was probably in college, which was many, many years ago, and I've read many of other Conrad's books since then. But when I wrote Heart of Diamonds, I didn't have it in mind, but I was surprised because a Congolese activist made a comment that raised a similar question recently. He said that I was becoming the Joseph Conrad of our generation, and that Heart of Diamonds was becoming the novel of the modern Congo Reform Association, which of course was powered by Heart of Darkness. And so I went back and reread the book and reread some of the criticism. I've got the latest Norton Critical Edition of Heart of Darkness, and quite frankly, I was surprised by many of the parallels that were there, I assure you, entirely subconsciously. It never entered my mind at the time.
One of the criticisms of Heart of Darkness is the way in which the African characters were portrayed.
Yes.
And I find that to be distinctly different from the way in which you portrayed the African characters and all of the other characters. One of my thing is that Heart of Darkness was more about the Heart of Darkness of Europe.
Yes.
Than it was about Africa, really. Heart of Diamonds is also as much about the Western world, but in a different way, in the sense that it's as much a part of the Western world as it is the African as well. What was at the back of your mind as an American writer?
I had a very conscious goal in mind to portray both the African people and the other nationalities, but very much the Africans, as people of dignity, as people that have the same kinds of hopes and aspirations that you and I do, because those were the people that we met when we visited Zambia and later when we went to Uganda. If there was one thing that I learned, it was that everyone is the same on a person-to-person level. You can pile all kinds of politics and ugly things on top of people, but in essence, human beings are human beings. We want the same things. We want our children to have a better life. And so when I portrayed the African people, whether they were a simple village fisherman or a soldier or a nurse or a doctor, I wanted them to be very real people, just like the ones that we met. And I was very conscious about doing that. A friend commented that one of the things that she was struck by, she's a Congolese photographer, was how real the people were. And she said, "How did you get them so real?" And I said, "It's very simple. I just wrote about people. They weren't African people or non-African people. They were just people." And if you keep that in mind, that's where your characters become very real. And that was a major goal of mine, to make the characters in Heart of Diamonds to be real people with real motivations to do things, the same things that other people would do in similar circumstances.
The media here in the U.S., and we could say much of the Western world, portrays the African world as a world of mystery, a world that is inhabited by people that we cannot understand and conflicts that we cannot understand. And yet you've managed to portray a different Africa. One of the things that really hit me at the beginning of the book was the description of the child soldier and his interaction with the doctor, and how that whole description of
the rape of his mother.
Right. Can you talk more about that? Because you are talking about something that is very real that are going through even as we speak right now.
It is very real. As I say, the novel is a work of fiction, but it was based on several years of research. I compiled thousands of news clippings and reports of incidents just like the ones that are described in Heart of Diamonds. The terror rape that occurs, the impressment of child soldiers, the kidnapping, the treatment of the minors, all of these things came from news clippings that I had gathered during my research. I read for a year before I put pen to paper on Heart of Diamond. I read several hundred books and magazine articles, newspaper accounts, and watched every movie that I could find. And I plagued my librarian to death to get me everything that the 5 million volumes in the Westchester Library System had on Congo. And so that helped me to make those kinds of incidents to be very, very real. And again, that was my goal. I write fiction, but I make a living as a journalist, and I'm very concerned about the accuracy of what I write. I don't believe in a lot of speculation. I'm more than happy to offer opinions from time to time, but I really believe in capturing the essence of things based on the facts of what actually happened, and then portraying them in a fictional way to make them entertaining. That's part of the goal. The biggest obstacle I had, especially like in that first scene where Christophe, the young boy whose mother is raped during a village raid, in front of him his little brother or sister, the baby, is killed, and then he is taken away to be a child soldier, I dialed back somewhat from some of the atrocities that I read about, because you can overload your reader. You can shock them too much. It's very important to establish a rapport very early with the reader so that, A, they know what they're reading is something they can believe, but two, it's something that they can be concerned about but not repulsed by. And that was a big part of what I tried to do, especially in that opening sequence. Later on, there are some more graphic discussions and descriptions of some of the things that happen. But as horrible as that opening sequence was, believe it or not, it was quieted down somewhat.
Help me to understand the place of romance in the novel.
Well, the romance is part of the human condition. And a modern novel needs to have some complexity to it. There are two or three subplots in Heart of Diamonds that help to carry the regular story, the full plot of the diamond smuggling scheme and the war and those things forward. And one of them is the romance between Valerie Gray, who's the protagonist, the beautiful television correspondent who comes to the Congo and discovers the diamond smuggling scheme, and her fiancé of sorts, David Powell, in the United States, and then, of course, Dr. Jamie Tallon, whom she meets in the Congo. And that sets up some tension that helps to make Valerie a more rounded character and a more real character. It also, of course, propels very much what happens later in the book, and I won't talk about what the result of that romance is, but it's a very important part of the climax of the book. But romance, it's a literary convention, if you will. I must confess, I had a little fun writing that part.
212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. That was a segment from my interview with Dave Donaldson, the author of Heart of Diamonds and the author of one of the premiums that we are offering you today. Of course, the premium comes with this interview, the full-length interview, and a few other interviews from the Congo series. The number to call is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please pick up that phone and support Afrobeat Radio and support WBAI and support yourself, and so that we can continue to bring you these programs. 212-209-2950. We have I'll give you a quick rundown of the premiums that we have. For $25, first of all, for your time, you can volunteer to be a member of WBAI. Secondly, you can, support BAI with just $25. And, you get your membership, and you also get all the rights that come with your membership, which includes voting rights and other rights and perks and so on and so forth. For $50, you can get the entire part one of the Congo series, which is about 8 interviews with scholars, journalists, activists who are working on the Congo, and a couple of Congolese citizens. And for $75, you can get our wonderful documentary, video documentary on the monetary system. That one is called, what's the name of that one? The Zeitgeist Addendum. The Zeitgeist Addendum, and that goes for $75. So the number here is 212-209-2950. I have some wonderful brothers who are determined to get some money out of your pocket. I also have some of you have been texting. You have been texting us on this show right now. You are telling us you are listening and you are having a wonderful time. Well, guys, you got to pick up the phone and call. It's not enough to just text to let us know you are enjoying the show. So the number that you have to call is 212-209-2950. Don't just text, okay? Pick up that phone. We accept MasterCard, we accept Visa, we accept electronic transfer. You can send it in by postal order, you can make an arrangement. And if you have less than $25, even if it's $5 that you want to give to WBAI, we will take it. Like Reggie said, we'll take it anyway. we'll take it from you. You know, we're not proud. We are not proud. We're not arrogant. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Now, I got a couple of brothers here. I got Philip, who's getting ready to tell us.
Yeah, I'm just here to thank a few people that called and made pledges. These are the ones that wanted to hear the names read on the air. So, Lawrence Miles from Freeport, New York. Thank you.
Freeport in the house?
Yes. Victoria Weeks from New York, New York.
Yes, that's Manhattan.
Yes. And Paul Keller from BK.
From Brooklyn.
From yes. Brooklyn in the house. All right. So we definitely. Got Queens,
thank
right?
You.
We got Queens. We got Bronx to go.
This is actually Long Island, yes.
And you have Long Island.
Oh, yeah, it's right. Close enough. It's close enough.
It's close enough.
Yeah, it's close enough.
212-209-2950. I got a very, 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 very special brother in the studio with us today. He doesn't usually come into the studio to speak to the audience. He usually comes in the studio to fix things, you know, like electronic things underneath the hood, you know, and so on and so forth. But he is one of these people that keeps the station rolling, that keeps it up every day. He fixes the computers. He fixes the transmitters. So you don't get to hear about him. You don't get to see him because, you know, he's the guy that gets it together. His name is Gracian Challenger. And we've decided to bring him out here so that, you know, you get to meet another of our brothers and sisters who are working here that you never get to meet. And you get to make him beg for some money. All right, Gracian, beg, man.
Yeah, I just want to say hi to all. And I want to welcome the new listeners, especially the ones from the continent, you know, the continental Africans. We don't hear too much about them. Or we see them talked about occasionally in terms of sports and things like that. But there are a lot of Africans from the continent who are involved in science and things like that, research and stuff. And I think that's important to recognize and to just at least acknowledge that we do more than play sports from the continent here. And we want to just ask for your support, because as a matter of fact, this series that's being done, it can only be presented to you partially. Because the breadth and scope of this report that's done by WE on the Congo is so large that we really can't fit it into the space that we have available, so most of it is only available on CDs and things like that, so you should consider pledging for them. And as we was pointing out earlier on about this whole thing about the minerals from the Congo, one of the minerals that are not talked about too much is tantalite. And we did mention the fact that it shows up in cell phones. But there's another one that's called tantalite. So you have coltan, and now you have tantalite, which is used in making solid capacitors for computer motherboards. Because in computer motherboards, a lot of these motherboards, the weak point in them turned out to have been the electrolytic capacitors, which dry out after so many hundred hours. And so it's always been difficult to make them last longer. So now that they have solid capacitors, then they don't have to worry. It can do several hundred thousand hours without failing. So therefore, you can get more reliable motherboards. So basically, a lot of these minerals show up all over the place. And so we have to keep in mind that our technology, in a lot of ways, supports some of the brutality that goes on to our brothers and sisters in the Congo. And so it'd be really great if you guys can support us and send us some money and pledge for one of the CDs or two of the CDs, or you can get the entire set. And I guess the prices and things like that will be explained to you as you call in the back. So it'd be really great if you can give us some support.
And that number to call is 212-209-2950. Thank you so much, Gracian, for coming out here. 212-209-2950. Studuso, didn't you have something that you wanted to tell the people before we go back to Dave Donelson?
Oh, I just wanted to ask people to please call in and pledge. And of course, the number is 212-209-2950.
212-209-2950. And those friends of yours who have been texting, tell them they it's not enough to text.
Indeed.
You know, you got to support the show. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. That's the number to call. Please pick up that phone and support WBAI, support Afrobeat Radio, and support yourself. Support the Congo. 212-209-2950. We'll go back to Dave Donelson for the next few minutes. And then we'll come back to you before the show is out. 212-209-2950. Thank you, callers on the line. I see 4 callers on the line, and yet we have 16 lines open. You know, so please pick up the phone. 212-209-2950. Your support is what makes our being here countable. You know, those Africans who are listening to us, your participation in this program, Afrobeat Radio, is essential. And you don't have to be an African. Like I said earlier, we're all Africans anyway. So, 212-209-2950, pick up that phone and support Afrobeat Radio. And in doing that, you'll be supporting WBAI and you'll be supporting yourself. Thank you. Thank you, callers on the line. 212-209-2950. Africa on multiple levels, and the Western world, in this case the US world.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that relationship in the role of the doctor being the caregiver in a very desperate situation to very desperate people. But we also see him as a tool that exposes the hypocrisy of the capitalist world, so to speak, this Western capitalist aid world. Can you talk about why you think that was an important part of the novel? And did you have an overt intention to educate people about what's going on?
Yes, I did. And it's one of the things, quite frankly, that my editor toned down somewhat. I would get a little preachy in certain passages, especially when I was talking about problems with the whole aid hierarchy and what harm it does and what good it does. And there's quite an argument to be made about that, as you know. But I did want to point out some issues that perhaps didn't lend themselves directly to the plot, but I think it did serve to demonstrate when he talks to the big medical corporation, for example, about why they won't give funds to his little tiny clinic in Africa. And their answer is a very real one. That, quite frankly, the reason most of those corporations give aid isn't out of a great humanitarian impulse, it's for business reasons. And the business has to produce at some point in time a return on the investment. So, large medical corporation turns down the aid request, and that leaves the doctor without funds to run his clinic. He's also, of course, suffering from the other part of the aid problem, which is how much of it gets diverted from the source to the recipient by the bureaucrats in between. In this case, they were the Congolese bureaucrats who had sticky fingers, as the money was supposed to come from the World Health Organization through the Congolese government to his clinic. Most of it stayed in someone else's bank account instead of coming down to him, which is, again, a very, very real problem. The specifics of what I talked about were fiction, but they were taken, again, from very real news accounts of this particular problem. That was one of the things, too, that showed a, as you mentioned, the relationship and the attitude that many Americans have toward Africa. And that is that, well, we just send them some money and they'll get all better. And the whole aid hierarchy is, well, that's a topic for a whole other book, actually.
Yeah.
But it was an important way to show the struggles that he had, not just with the day-to-day treatment of his patients, but with dealing with the very real way business is done and life is goes on, in particular in Congo.
Did you find that while you were visiting Zambia, for instance, there was a difference in value systems? In other words, the world of Zambia, it's almost incomprehensible to the world of the U.S. I find that difficult to explain to people.
It is very different. Yes, it is. I think the principal difference is in the amount of enjoyment people get from their daily life. They seem to be less pressure. They have a less hectic life. The village of Siankaba, which I allude to in the acknowledgments of Heart of Diamonds, is the one that I used as a model for Maya Manene. And it's about 90 people, and they live in certainly relative poverty, and they have subsistence farms and a few cash-paying jobs on other industrial farms in the area. They do some fishing and raise cattle, and they have an agrarian lifestyle that Americans haven't seen probably since the middle of the 19th century in this country. And we can't comprehend to a large extent what it's like to live that way. A very nice gentleman named Dokta, who invited us into his home and was very proud of showing us his television set, Of course, there's no electricity in the village, so the television set was powered by automobile batteries, which meant that you only watched it when there was something really important on, like a soccer game. And if the batteries ran down, then someone from the village had to take the batteries, about 15 miles into the nearest town to get them recharged and then bring them back. So it was not, it was a major undertaking, which we don't even comprehend. Those kinds of life choices every day. You know, our biggest choice is, do we get a low-fat or a full-fat latte from Starbucks for $5? I mean, it is incomprehensible to many Americans, absolutely.
Over the course of this series, we've been talking to a number of people. And one of the things that have come out has been that the war in the Congo is a resource war.
Mm-hmm.
How would you explain that to the kid in Westchester County, the teenager in Queens?
Yes, it's interesting because I've had the opportunity to do that since Heart of Diamonds came out. I've spoken to many high schools and some college classes, as well as made appearances at libraries and bookstores. I've found that the young people that I speak to are actually much more aware, perhaps, than we give them credit for. Maybe it's the ones that I'm speaking to are, they wouldn't be in the audience, but they're aware from the media of some of the horrible things that are going on. Getting them to understand, though, that the reasons behind the war is difficult, because all they see are good guys, bad guys. Bad things happen to people, and the people that do those bad things need to be punished. And, of course, it's not as clear-cut as that. Bad things happen to people so that the evil people can get their bank accounts fatter. And that's always been the motivation behind every war in Congo, and probably most wars around the world when you get right down to it. Most of them, they may have an ethnic, tribal, religious patina on top of them, but underneath it's who's going to control the country.
Welcome back to Afrobeat Radio. You are listening to our interview with Dave Donaldson, who is the author of Heart of Diamonds, and is a premium that we are offering you today.